Hello and welcome to another episode of The Grey NATO. It's a loose discussion of travel, adventure, diving, driving gear, and most certainly watches. This is episode 385, and it's proudly brought to you by the always growing TGN supporter crew. We thank you all so much for your continued support, and if you'd like to support the show, please visit thegreynato.com for more details. My name is James Stacey, and I'm joined as ever by my friend and co-host, Jason Heaton. Jason, how's it going, old buddy? It's been a few minutes.
Yeah, right. I've got to remember how to work this thing, how to do this.
Yeah, you take a couple weeks off, you get rusty.
Yeah, I know. It was kind of a tiring but also a rejuvenating break for me. And I know actually, as timing works out, you're actually just embarking on a couple of weeks of your own vacation. So. Yeah, we're kind of overlapping in the middle here.
Yeah, due to the not unique but special way in which I structured my work life, it made more sense to take some time off due to some other commitments, take some time off from TGN due to some other commitments in the last couple of weeks, and then I'm on vacation with my family starting yesterday. TGN, I don't see as the same type of work. Otherwise, it really is a delight to do so. Here we are recording an episode before we head up to the cottage for the better part of a week to hang out up there, hoping for good weather and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, the weather's turned for the better here. It was pretty hot, the past few weeks, actually really hot, I guess the couple of weeks that we were off. And then it's just kind of turned over the past few days. And yesterday was lovely and today looks like about the same. So I hope that's kind of moving your way or you've got it hanging over you.
It's sunny here today, not too hot. So we'll see how that works out. Looks like there's rain in the forecast, but hopefully that blows by and doesn't present a major problem, as we've got most of my sort of extended family showing up to the cottage, which is a big group of people. They do it about once a summer. Everybody shows up. So should be a good time.
With that number of people, I think you told me it was couple dozen or more. Where does everyone stay? I mean, does everyone do tents or is the cottage big enough for everyone to sleep?
No, the cottage is probably big enough for maybe two families and then maybe three if the weather was bad and you really didn't want to be in a tent. But there's, several houses on the property owned by my aunts and uncles.
I see.
And some of those have some spare rooms. So we're just kind of taking up all the free space we can.
Yeah. Yeah. Hard to believe it's August. I just, we say it every year. We could probably go back every early August episode we've done since 2016, and we probably always express our shock and surprise that here we are with a month or two left of good summer fun weather and that sort of thing. But here we are once again.
Yep. And exactly. August has come very quickly. Thankfully, it is the start of August, not the end.
Yeah.
We've got a solid month of summer break left with the kids, and then we'll be staring down the barrel of September, which means the Toronto Timepiece Show. We're going to be doing a live episode on the Saturday. Stay tuned for timing and scheduling for all of that. And then Saturday evening, we'll be doing our annual marathon party. It's not one to miss if you're able to make it to the city. We should have room for pretty much anybody who would like to join in. So stay tuned for the RSVP for that. I'm sorting out some details in the next couple of weeks. So I would expect to have the RSVP up, end of August, early September, which is plenty of time to sign up for a cool party.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to the Timepiece Show. There's some folks coming into town that'll be fun to hang out with. Obviously, some of the usual crew, but also an extension therein. Should be a good time.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's always a good time. And boy, if the weather holds like it did last year, I mean, it was beautiful to just be out walking around the city late at night after the show and just hanging out at your place and going for sushi. And, here we go. Rinse and repeat. I find no reason to change any of our routines there.
Nope. Sushi, if marathon. Anything, I would say if you can add a day, come in a day earlier. We can, we can just spend a little bit more time together. But it's a great weekend, one that I look forward to. I know that this year they are charging for the show.
Oh, interesting.
I think it's $20-$25 or something once you do all the Ticketmaster fees and the rest of it. If that's a deal breaker, then I'm not super sure that we're on the same wavelength. That $25 for a weekend of stuff to do in Toronto is as close to free as somebody can put a number to.
Yeah.
And the show is a really good time. Certainly, even if you only came in for the day to check out, our live show, some of the other live events on the stage and do a lap of the show, that still feels like good value to me.
Yeah.
And if it makes you feel better and we're not, there's no cover charge for the marathon party. So
certainly not.
We should have a good time doing that as well. But look, I think the point of today's show, we don't have, like, there's not a ton going on in the watch world. There's not something we feel like we absolutely must speak about, but it's been a couple of weeks. We've had a few adventures. And I think today's show will just be kind of catching up on that kind of nice part of the summer where you feel maybe less inclined to make everything a piece of content.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, doing some cool stuff and some stuff that we're happy to chat about.
Yeah.
Before we dive into that, and I guess really to bridge us into one of the first things that happened in the last couple of weeks, do you want to dive into some wrist check?
Yeah, sure. I am wearing and have been wearing for several days the Zin 144S, the Jubilom. The all black one, you'd written a review of this one. I referred to it a couple of times back in your blog to watch days. This is the watch I actually bought last year in Toronto from Tom Place. And I'll be honest, you know, I love this watch, but I struggled to find just the right kind of strap fit for it. And I mentioned this on a previous episode and I got a lot of ideas and I'm still kind of making some decisions about that. The bracelet, you know, Tom sold it to me on this lovely vintage Porsche design bracelet, black bracelet, kind of the rolled bullet style bracelet, if you want to call it that, as well as the H-Link Zin bracelet that came with it. Both really spectacular and a great look for the watch, but I'm just not a 24/7 bracelet guy a lot. So I was looking for the right strap and I was kind of struggling to the point where I thought, yeah, maybe I'm not, you know, maybe I can't keep this watch because if it's not something I want to wear regularly because of the, you know, bracelet, conundrum, you know, who knows? So, but I put it on the Erica's. It was a gray Erica's that I forgot had a loomed center white stripe till the other night when I was, you know, lying awake in the dark and I looked and I was like,
oh, yeah, I didn't realize
that,
was
striped glow. It was really, really bizarre. And it looks great on that. And I, you know, the only quibble I have with it is that I'm kind of a nitpicker about matching strap hardware to the watch case, and this doesn't have black hardware, so I'm still on the hunt for something kind of perfect, and I've got a few ideas, but stay tuned for that. And yeah, as you kind of hinted at, this watch played a role in something I was up to over the past couple of weeks, so we'll leave it there for now. But what do you have on? You've got something pretty special on today.
Yeah, rocking something new that Sarah and I bought last week when I was in the city. We being Hodinkee, launched the Doxa Sub 200T Army LE. I can now say that if you've been keeping track of all the stuff I said was coming from Doxa that would make for an exciting summer, I hope it's now clear that it was the T-Graph, the titanium Kussler, and now the 200T Army. This was a 250-piece LE. It was sold for $2,000. It is essentially a rethinking of the standard Army, but in the 200T case, so 39 millimeters. I'll be honest, I'm pretty sure this watch wears like 36. The watch wears very small. I think it wears even smaller than my yellow, and I'm not entirely sure why yet. It's probably the coloring. It's all this kind of gray, taupe, tan, sand color with orange accents. I really like it. It's something where I can't take any credit for the design, but over time I kind of weighed in and helped provide opinions. Whether those opinions necessarily made it to the final model, not so sure, but definitely the impetus of like, the starting point of going, we'd like to do a smaller Army in the Hodinkee color spectrum. That just was an instant win for me. And as an already fan of the 200, I thought it was quite exciting. Sarah and I bought one and I've kind of been wearing it ever since. I don't really want to take it off. You know, I'm on record and I don't want to be unfair to Doxa, certainly not on the you know, the honeymoon phase of a brand new watch that they made with Hodinkee. I don't really like their rubber strap, and I'm not a huge fan of their bracelet either. There's nothing wrong with either of them. They're very popular with the majority of the audience. They just don't work for me. So I have it on a very similar strap I wore my 200 on, which is a sort of nylon two-piece military-style strap from Alifit. I'll put it in the show notes. People have asked. I think it's a really nice match. It comes in several colors, so if you want to tone it like more for the dial center, or if you want to tone it more for the bezel, like in a darker taupe, that you could do that as well. But these are like $12, $13 straps from Amazon.
Oh wow, yeah, nice.
And then it came on a gray NATO also. It came with a gray NATO also. That is quite nice. So that's a good option as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And being 18 millimeters, I don't have a ton of straps. I still have the mesh, like the shark mesh that I kind of pieced together and ground down with a grinder for the Diving Star 200T, which I sold a little while ago. And I could fit that on as well. But I think right now and for the summer, I think this is the right look.
Yeah.
But I'm absolutely loving the watch.
Yeah, that's great. And it came in just the right time for the remainder of the summer, because it just seems like that sort of watch. It's that's great. Yeah, it looks tremendous. And boy, Dox has been on a roll lately. It's pretty cool.
They have. Yeah.
The topper edition that I had for a short time.
Incredible.
And
And the Cussler.
And the earlier T-Graph and just, T-Graph 2, I guess they're calling it. But Dox of summer for sure.
Yeah, and we've got over 1,000 messages, I think, in the Slack thread for this watch launch.
Wow.
I'm pretty happy with how it went. I'm just pumped to have a Doxa that I'm like really excited about after selling the 200T. And rocking the new Army and enjoying it very much.
Amazing.
And I suppose that brings us into like one, I was down in New York last week. We also did a hangout at Watches of Switzerland in Soho. We did another one of our happy hours. It was very well attended. Saw some really cool watches, met some folks that I'm sure are listening now. And, a big thank you to everybody for coming out for all of that. But to be honest, like I'm essentially just rambling on here, but I'd love to hear about what kind of cool achievement you recently wore this in for, and then we can get into other stuff that we've gotten up to the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's so it's fresh in my memory because it was just on Saturday, just about 3-4 days ago. Mm-hmm. I had been training all summer for this long distance open water swim that they conduct every year. Apparently this was the 20th anniversary of the swim. I didn't even kind of register that until I was there, and they were kind of celebrating that. But the race is race, I guess. Some people race. I wasn't racing. The event is called Pointe to La Pointe, and it goes from this small, really kind of beautiful touristy coastal town in northern Wisconsin called Bayfield, that there's a regular ferry service that takes people, tourists and cabin owners and things from Bayfield Harbor across a stretch of Lake Superior to one of the Apostle Islands. The Apostle Islands are, in biblical terms, I think, some people might assume there are 12 islands. I think they're actually more than that. But Madeline Island is the closest one to the mainland. And I believe it has the most kind of population density. I mean, if you can even call it that, it's a lot of cabins and kind of people go there to hike and sit on the beach. And so the swim goes from Bayfield across to Madeline Island. And it's a 2.1 mile swim in Lake Superior. So, those familiar with the Great Lakes or have heard me kind of waxing nostalgically and poetically about the Great Lakes, you'll know that it's a huge body of water, quite cold and kind of with capricious weather. And so all of those factors were a little bit daunting, but as it happens, fortunately, it turned out to be a really great day. And I did it. I did it very slow. I was about, I got some advice that towards the end, there was some current that you want to save some strength for. And then, I don't know, about 2/3 of the way across, I've got this nagging, I don't even know if it's torn. I've never really had it officially looked at, but my rotator cuff in my left shoulder, swimming will certainly aggravate, as you might imagine. And mm-hmm.
And strengthened.
Yeah, yeah. And by about 2/3 of the way across, I was really feeling it. Like I could get almost no power out of my left arm. So I kind of gutted it out and finished. For me, that was a big achievement. That was my goal. I wasn't out for any specific time. But it was great. It was a really well-run event. They had, I think they said 75 kayakers, like volunteer kayakers, as kind of a safety team, as well as bigger boats, like power boats that were even further out to be available in case people needed help. But the kayaks kind of created this corridor and just kept an eye on all the swimmers. And there were, I believe, 500 or 600 swimmers total. So a lot of people.
That's
that
amazing.
They sent off.
Did Christy get in a kayak to support?
No. She saw me off at the beginning at the beach in Bayfield, and then she hopped the ferry, and it's about a 20-minute ferry ride across, and then walked to the end and met me there. So I saw her when I got out of the water. But I did also at the beginning saw a TGN listener. I knew he was actually participating in this, Taylor. Taylor, if you're listening, shout out to you. Thanks for coming over and saying hi at the beach. I was pretty impressed and amazed afterwards when I was kind of looking at the results that Taylor finished like second or third, like in the non-competitive division. So he wasn't with the racers, the triathletes and the guys that were headed off at the very beginning. But regardless, he set a very fast time. I think he was an hour faster than me, which tells you something about his abilities and also mine. Yeah, it was good to see him. And yeah, it was a really fun event. And, you know, other than my shoulders are still quite sore. I can kind of barely lift my left arm over my head right now. But we had a nice relaxing end to the weekend. We kind of broke our journey back to the Twin Cities by stopping at Christy's family cabin in kind of northern Wisconsin and just relaxed there for a night and a day and did some non-swimming lake time. So just kind of floating around in that lake and then came home on Sunday. So it was a good adventure. I'm, you know, these things that, it, you know, we talk about type two fun, the kind of fun that is fun after it's over. And I would say this is that. I had been training probably not enough. I was swimming. I kind of worked my way up to 2 miles of open water swimming in the lakes around the cities here. And, you know, when you have something on the horizon, you know, you might remember this from Baker or if, you know, if anyone's done any kind of 5Ks or marathon training, like when it's out there in the distance and you're aiming towards it, even if you might be enjoying a relaxing summer or a few months, like it's always in the back of your mind that, you know, this is looming, this is coming. What's the weather going to be like? Am I going to be fit enough? Have I trained enough? Do I have the right gear, et cetera? You know, to say that sounds like you're like, why do you even bother doing these things? Like, these are optional activities. Why do you put yourself through it? But I will say that, first of all, it was very satisfying, very happy to have done it. Also, happy it's over. Happy to have the month of August to, you know, swim if I want to, but if I don't want to, I don't have to. So
yeah, of course.
Kind of nice to have that behind me. But
rehab the shoulder a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Yeah, there you go. Well, that's awesome, man. That's great. Yeah, let's see. What else is, I've got a list. So I'm in no specific order, but definitely high on my measure of excitement. I have, I took a trip to Germany, but you know, I just can't imagine swimming that far if I'm honest. Like, I'm not a bad swimmer.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't think I've ever enjoyed it like the way I used to enjoy running or would love to enjoy running again.
Yeah.
Where the idea of like, oh, it's going to be an hour and a half. And I know that like the first 5 minutes,
mm-hmm.
my blood's not going to feel quite right. But after that, it's going to be like a flow state sort of thing. Like I'm cruising.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's a moment somewhere in the middle where you're like, you know, maybe we could go for 2 or 3 hours. Who knows, right? And then of course the last half hour, you just like start to fall off a cliff, or at least that's how it was for me. I never trained up to a marathon or anything.
Yeah.
So yeah, I definitely respect the drive, but at the same time, like it's now behind you. That's awesome. You mm-hmm. have the achievement. That's a big swim.
Yeah.
And also just to reprise, like getting in the water, you know, how long has it been since you did Alcatraz?
That was, you know, I looked back, it was 2009. I mean, I was a much younger man at that time. I think I was, gosh, I would have been younger than you at that point. And it was, that was tough. I mean, that was up to that, you know, point. I mean, or that was the toughest thing I'd done. And
sure.
This kind of brought back some memories. I would say this was like the conditions were easier. There wasn't kind of the waves and the strong current and the prospect of a great white shark below me. but still, you know, it was, this was a further distance. I'm a lot older. I would say this was colder water, but you know, you talk about kind of swimming that distance. I like to swim. I can swim a long ways, obviously, but I do enjoy it. But there's something so different about the exertion level of swimming, where, you know, if you go for a run, you start to feel it in your joints, or you start to feel like, oh, I didn't eat enough today, or I ate too much, or whatever. With swimming, you're horizontal, gravity isn't a factor. There's mm-hmm. something weird about your, I don't know.
Well, it's also, maybe, I think, much more difficult because in running, sorry to interrupt, but in running, like you understand your progress because it's similar to walking.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Right.
In the water, I just don't know how far I've gone. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And sometimes you can go like, oh, I'm going to swim from this dock to that dock, or I have to swim from the dock out to a boat.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's easy. That's, you know, maybe it's 100 yards, maybe it's 200 yards. When I used to do a lot of diving in Vancouver, we'd go to Porto Cove and you'd have a fairly long surface swim, but you would know, like, I'm getting down at the steps that they built.
Yeah.
And then I'm just going to that buoy.
Yeah.
That's my distance. Whereas, like, swimming, like, genuinely into open water, you're just kind of, it'd be like walking without the ground really moving below you.
Right.
Necessarily.
Right. And there's nothing to look at.
I guess for me, it always, there's nothing to look at. And even if you
there's
can,
no
like,
reference.
Yeah. Like, even my experience, you know, if you've ever lost something in the water, a pair of sunglasses, a flashlight, whatever.
Yeah.
And you go, like, you immediately look like, oh, okay, I'm straight off of this dock and this is just on my left. And you're trying to, like, triangulate where you are. It's hopeless.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everything's moving. Everything's moving all the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, don't get me wrong, I'm sure there's some way of understanding, like, if you're running, the world is spinning and all these sorts of things, but you're really just moving yourself.
Right.
And the world is going past you. Whereas if in the water, that whole environment is moving around you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I think I've always found to be a trip when I have, like, when I know I have to swim pretty far.
Yeah. And I think I really noticed this during the training. During the swim, there were kind of kayaks and other swimmers kind of around the whole time, which was some level of diversion. But when during my training over the past few months, I mean, I'll admit, after a while, it gets kind of boring. You know, it's like I'm swimming for 90, 100 minutes, and you can't really see anything. And then, I know there are, you know, waterproof headphones that you can wear or earbuds that you can listen to music, but I haven't done that. And so, like, you're kind of alone with your thoughts. It's very meditative as well as being exertion. And then all you're seeing is like the end of your arm over and over again. It's just nothing to see. And so to your point about knowing your distance, when I did Alcatraz, you know, there weren't, as far as I know, there weren't like GPS watches. Maybe there were early ones, but like having the Garmin for training and then for this, I was actually able to pause and look and say, okay, I'm a third of the way. I'm a half of the way, you know, which was really helpful.
Or have it do that thing where it beeps at every whatever interval.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or vibrates so you would know. But yeah, I guess the closest I could imagine is like the few times that I've walked in the desert.
Mm, mm-hmm.
You can look at something and go like, I feel like I know how far away that is. And you start walking and you're just like, nope, I was wrong. This is taking way longer than I expected. Something about the ground, the relationship to the your ability to move through the environment for sure would be a trip for me.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, that's very impressive. I'm glad you enjoyed it. I hopefully the shoulder, a couple of sauna sessions and some stretching maybe gives you that range of motion back.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. 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 So yeah. And then you mentioned your Germany trip. I mean, that was going on, what, 2 weeks ago or whatever? And it was
2 weeks ago.
It looked amazing. I mean, you had the whole team over there and, you know, that part of Germany, I've been there a couple times and it's a really magical place.
It was my first time in Glashütte. And, so many months ago started kind of to sketch out a project with Lange where instead of doing a press trip, where they bring in a bunch of people for one watch, it was if we could pitch enough stories that we were interested in doing, things that we wanted to discover or shoot or, build out as far as, you know, stories for the magazine, stories for the site, video, that sort of thing, that might be more, there might be, you know, ability to go deeper than you would go if you just went out to see a watch or if you went to the Audrain and you had an hour with a watch or something like that, like I've done in the past.
Yeah.
So we worked as a team, the Hodinkee team, to come up with, you know, the better part of like 20 different story ideas and pieces of content and that sort of thing. And the majority of the edit team, including Ben, went out and we had 3 full days in Glashütte kind of exploring all the various elements of the way that Lange makes watches. And I was, you know, to be clear, already a fan of this brand. Those listening to the show that know me well know I'm not exactly an active participant in high-end watchmaking, but I'm certainly a fan.
Yeah.
And I like the way that the brand comes to things. I also like that, you know, if you compare them to their quote-unquote peers, you know, maybe that's Patek, maybe that's AP, maybe that's Vacheron. They're making 5,000 watches a year.
Mm-hmm.
AP's making 50.
Yeah.
And so it's a whole different scale in terms of the watchmaking. And so much of it is just like exceptionally hands-on.
Oh, yeah.
So we saw some of the usual machines where they're developing base plates and things like that. And then once they're developed, they're essentially doing the rest of that work by hand. Or they're building, you know, we workshops for chronographs, workshops for Zeitwerks. We saw the engraving department and I got to try engraving my own like balance cock.
I saw that. You did really well, I thought.
For a civilian. Like, yeah, we got a lesson from this really, really nice lady named Julia. She was a former dental hygienist, which of course feels like a great choice in terms of, or a dental technician in terms of, you know, the hand-eye coordination and the comfortability with, you know, scratching hard surfaces and that sort of thing. And then they have like a program for people who visit where you get like a German silver balance cock, but it's 5 times the size of one that would go in the watch.
Yeah.
And then they teach you this technique called tremblage, which is essentially like a back and forth motion with a very sharp flat edge, similar to taking the wide profile of a screwdriver mm-hmm. and rocking it back and forth on a piece of wood would give you yeah. immediately. So you're making little zigzags
sure.
as the tool rocks from one edge of the blade to the other.
Yeah.
And she gave us a 2 minute to 5 minute sort of explanation and kind of handed it off. And I went to town, and after a few minutes, she said I was doing very well. So it's exceptionally difficult, to be clear, and mine looks like trash. You can see it on my my Instagram, but it went pretty well. And my only goal was to be better at it than Tantan, and I think I achieved that. Tantan and I did it together. But man, we got to see, you know, where they do the Handwerkskunst, which is the fully hand sort of
crazy
dimpled pebbled dial.
Yeah,
and we watched somebody work on that. We watched each one of them kind of create their own expression of the balance cock. So any one of them can kind of take a watch and look at it under a loop and go, oh, you know, so-and-so made this one.
Wow. Yeah.
And each one has sort of like very clear markers if you're part of the team to know who did which one, which was cool. And yeah, we saw their whole production facility. We saw where they develop movements. We saw where they do after-sales service. So they had some very interesting, you know, watches from 20 years ago that were in for service and, you know, get entirely pulled apart by a specialist who knows the watch inside and out. And at this level of watchmaking, a lot of the watch when it's put together is custom where everything is made to a certain specification, but the watch itself has to run a certain way.
Yeah.
So it's similar to the way like a motor might've been made in the 70s or maybe even into the 80s where it's hand tuned and they're not all going to be identical. And, you know, there's very little about it that would be the type of watchmaking that like a Rolex or a Tudor is taking part in, which is very much industrialized to get to a certain end goal. This is industrialized to get to a point where somebody takes over and builds the functioning watch and is fine tuning various elements for that one watch, whereas the next one they start building might not require the same tuning.
Huh.
It's that sort of thing. It's a very traditional sort of scope.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, ate some great German food. We went to an opera in Dresden.
Oh, nice. At the
Semper.
The Semper, where the clock is, right?
Yep, exactly. Yeah, so we got to go inside there and see the clock.
Wow.
So we got to see it. It's an electric clock that uses a dual sort of day-date display or a dual-digit big grand date display, similar to what was eventually, you know, this is what inspired the display on a Lange, the grand date display on a Lange. And so we got to go into that little tiny room and see how that's done. Exceptionally cool.
Wow.
And then we saw, we got a whole tour of the building, and the tour of the building, of course, the joke at Hodinkee now is that James doesn't actually like the arts. I'm maybe not so much for operas or dance retrospectives and that sort of thing. I really enjoyed the building. It was very cool. Of course, it had burned down at least once before, maybe twice in total, including during the bombing of Dresden, and then when they rebuilt it, they built most of it out of plaster so that there's no wood involved. But there's this huge area, you know, wherever the what you might call, I guess, a mezzanine, you know, the area outside of the performing space where you might hang out or, you know, go get a drink at intermission. All of it looks like oak. And it's all plaster that somebody painted to look like oak.
Wow. Wow.
I've never been in a building quite like it at all. Huh. And I mean, it's absolutely, I don't know the right word, resplendent on the outside. I'll include a photo for sure. Or a link, sorry, in the show notes to the Semper. They were doing a sort of dance retrospective thing about Frida Kahlo. The Mexican artist. So we watched that the one night, and then otherwise, a couple of great meals. It's in a bit of a remote spot, so you have a drive from Dresden into Glashütte each day, which was quite lovely. I had a chance to walk around Dresden for an afternoon. It's absolutely gorgeous. It was a really, really good trip, very enjoyable, and we shot some great stuff. So I'm really excited to see the content kind of hit the magazine, hit the YouTube, all that kind of stuff in the future. If you're following along, some of that is hinted, but I certainly wouldn't want to give anything away. But we have some cool stuff coming on that front as well. So yeah, that was a good one. And then I guess on the,
I saw some cars in there too. I'm sure Wilhelm had something to do with that.
Yeah, Wilhelm, you know, lives not super far from the manufacturer. Wilhelm Schmidt is the CEO of Lange, and he's you know, has a career history in cars and also is an avid sort of fan of vintage cars. It's why the brand's involved with, you know, Concorso d'Elegance and the Audrain and all these.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, he had come out one day. He came out with a handful of different cars, kind of a different one each day, depending on the weather.
Yeah.
But it was fun. He brought out a lovely old 356, quickly becoming kind of my favorite thing in Porsche's lineage, are these these really kind of old, simple, fun little sports cars. Yeah. You know, much less serious than what the brand, or maybe not less serious, but much less intense than what the brand is making today, as far as the modern cars go. Just older cars really are doing it for me these days.
Yeah.
And so he had one of those. And I like the stuff before the 911s. That's exciting as well. So yeah, we got to do a little bit of car stuff, film some stuff out in the wild, film some stuff at the manufacturer. So that it should be good. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. But it was fun, and I hadn't been out to that part of the world before. They're right, literally like right across the street from Nomos.
Oh sure, yeah.
And Mula Goshuta and Goshuta Originals just down the street. You know, there's probably like seven or eight manufacturers. Tutima and that sort of thing are all kind of tucked in that area.
Yeah. Did you get to the museum? Cool. The Glashütte Watchmaking Museum there?
I did not, no.
Oh, yeah.
Have to save it for another one.
Worth it on another trip, yeah, for sure.
Oh, I'm sure. Tim Jeffries is working on like more of a tourism piece, like a watch tourist piece for the area, because not everybody's going to be able to see what we did and then go to Lange and get the same experience.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of stuff in that area and in Dresden that's devoted to German watchmaking. So there's a chance that he got there as well.
Yeah, cool. Nice.
But yeah, that was one. You know, I've got a few other things on the list, but that was like the major one. It was, you know, three full days in Germany. So, the you know, flights on either side took up the whole week. And then, yeah, got back and boogied right up to the cottage. But, you know, seeing watches in service and that, I can see a note here on our kind of show notes here. What you've got something to do with service as well?
Yeah, I got a couple watches back in the past few weeks from service. One of them was, I guess this is a bit of a full circle moment back to the Hodinkee Doxa LE, and I had to send off my Blancpain Black Bathyscaphe, the Hodinkee edition from years ago that I got for my 50th birthday, and it was just kind of running erratically, and so I dropped it at a local retailer, Blancpain retailer, and they sent it off to Blancpain Service Center in Florida. And it took, took 3 or 4 months, and they did a full service on it, and I got that back.
Nice.
A couple of weeks ago, and then I guess, you know, that's great. I'm happy to have it back. But more significantly, if you remember, I have that Speedmaster Mark III with the blue dial, the big helmet case.
Yeah, yeah, and I saw this pop up on your Instagram.
Yeah, that was running really poorly. I got it at an estate sale several years ago, and I was I wasn't sure what to do with it. It wasn't running great, but it was running. You know, the center minute chronograph hand was dragging, and it would stop occasionally, and it looked pretty crusty around the gasket, around the crystal. So I kind of bit the bullet and sent it to Garen Fraze, who's a watchmaker and an educator in I think it's a pretty small town down in Texas, but popped up on the Slack as someone who actually, he wrote to me and said, look, I kind of specialize in vintage chronographs and I'd love to take a crack at it. So I sent it down to him, and that one took several months as well. And he sent me progress reports along the way, you know, did a full disassembly, had to order parts and kind of fashion, you know, kind of as you will with 50-year-old watches, kind of make on the fly decisions and adapt things as he was going,
I
got that back finally, and it's working great. And he said he tested it out to 30 meters of water resistance, but as a good watchmaker will, cautioned me not to get it wet. So I have really no plans to do that with this watch, but it's fun to get back. And just like with my Zin, you know, it's on the original Omega bracelet, but it's just such a top-heavy watch that I'm kind of looking for the right strap for it. So again, if anyone has ideas for that, that's a weird one to fit on a strap.
Yeah.
So we'll see. It's not really a NATO kind of watch. So we'll
see. No, maybe more Bund.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I wonder if that would work on that. Mm. Boy, that would set it up really high on the wrist, but you know, whatever.
Yeah, it would for sure.
Yeah.
You'd be doing a little, what's the Burt Reynolds? with the compass.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, the deliverance compass.
Deliverance,
yeah, right,
thank you.
Right, yeah, yeah.
My brain was stuck on a bridge over the River Kwai.
Yeah, right.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, look, hey, look, speaking of movies, that gives us at least a sort of plug. And, you know, we didn't talk about this, so this is a genuine, fresh question with no plan. Do you have an affinity for the Odyssey? Do you have a love of the classics?
No, not so much. No, I've been debating whether to go see this or not. You saw it, right?
1.25 times, I would say.
oh boy! So, what does that mean?
yeah, so I went the one night. My eldest daughter's 12. She's very much into movies. I'm trying to like, you know, steer that into to really find the zones that she likes. But that includes, you know, we'll see new movies as much as possible. Mm-hmm. And we don't live far from a theater. It's just down the street. And one night we really had very little going on. And it was kind of one of these that happens in households with lots of kids, but like a low wavelength sort of afternoon.
Yeah.
Everybody was kind of down, not down sad, just like, you know, introverted for the day. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it looked like it was going to be an early night. And I thought I had plenty of energy. So I was like, oh, let's go see The Odyssey. It was the opening night or the night after.
Yeah.
So we went to like a 10 o'clock showing. And I think I was asleep by 10:45. I just gone.
Oh, that's great. Like, you slept through asleep. The movie.
The whole thing. Like, well, I'm like, I think I saw the first 35, 40 minutes.
Wow. And your daughter saw it though. She
watched the whole thing. And then like, you know, there's a very, it's quite loud at the end. And I woke up and saw the last 30 seconds.
Oh, that's great. That is
and
great.
Then walked home at one, you know, it was like 1:30 in the morning when Amazing. We strolled home.
Wow.
So I just, I remember back in the day, and I think I probably talked about it on the show, but like when Blade Runner came out, I saw that a couple times at like midnight showings with Jason Lim.
Oh,
in
sure.
Vancouver.
Yeah.
And I don't have it like that anymore. I thought I did. I thought a movie would keep me awake, and it's just like, nope, I was out, gone, full dad style. No chance. No chance of me staying awake.
Oh, man.
So then this weekend, Thomas Holland and I were hoping to go diving.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had this week in New York. I had my gear mostly sorted, but like I kind of wanted to get the regs and BC just in the pool at Scuba 2000 nearby, just to make sure that there wasn't like something that needed a quick service.
Yeah.
So I didn't get to that. And then I texted him like, hey, you know, what are you looking to do this weekend? You still want to go diving? He's like, I haven't had any time to figure out my gear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, he like me is maybe diving once or twice a year currently, unless there's a vacation dive to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's like, let's pivot and maybe you want to go see The Odyssey. I said, yeah, I gotta probably check that box before it's too embarrassing that I slept through it. So I went out his way and we actually drove a couple of his cars and like had a nice little 30 minutes, 40 minutes or hour in a couple old Alphas.
Oh, nice.
Which was delightful. He recently got back one that I won't spoil for the audience. There'll be a video about it soon. That was a delight. And then I drove Spaghetti, his Spider, both absolute blasts. Now I've been looking at Spiders every night on Auto Trader. nowhere to park it still, but man, it was a nice thing to drive. And I think, you know, probably the right sort of tone for Sarah to get in it and go to dinner and that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So we did that and then hightailed it out to an IMAX showing, not IMAX 70, but an IMAX showing of The Odyssey. And I, you know, I would say I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would caveat, because I know I saw it on the Slack, like people were really nuts about it and enjoying it. I would caveat a few things from my review. I'm not like a huge classics nerd. I'm not a swords and sandals epic movie guy.
Yeah.
That said, hugely ambitious and visually an absolute knockout. I think it will go down as one of the more important films of the decade in terms of what they achieved and the continued clash between, you know, to be clear, like obviously this is based on previous IP being The Odyssey, but you know, the continued clash between auteur filmmaking and like the Marvel stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, again, I say that somewhat ineffectively because whatever The Odyssey did in 7 or 8 or 9 days, the new Spider-Man movie did in 2.
Yeah.
Maybe not winning that fight necessarily, nor do I think that that fight has to be a this versus that.
Yeah.
Spider-Man has always been an incredibly accessible, hugely popular franchise. Again, not my circus. But man, there are elements of The Odyssey that I absolutely adored. And then there were other stuff where it felt like maybe the adherence to shooting it on cameras the size of, you know, giant, you know, restaurant fridges maybe hindered some of the action and the rest of it. But yeah, I would say it's definitely worth seeing, especially if you enjoy like a spectacle.
Yeah.
And if like me, you kind of, a lot of the last 10, 15 years of spectacle movies were either Marvel stuff that I don't feel any way about at all. Mm-hmm. Or, what are the ones with the blue guys? Avatar.
Oh,
which
yeah.
I actively dislike.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it bums me out that like such an incredibly talented director is making movies that to me look like a tech demo for a new GeForce card or something.
Yeah.
I just like you go back and watch Terminator 2 and you go like, why couldn't I just have had 10 more of these? Aliens, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, Cameron is incredibly talented, but we've devoted a lot of his career now to these movies that I just don't feel any way about at all. Kind of didn't enjoy. But yeah, I highly recommend going to check it out. And I mean, within that vein of Nolan's doing this, I liked it more than Oppenheimer for sure. I'd liked it less than Tenet, if that's helpful. Probably isn't. And then with Dune on the horizon in December, some cool big movies, you know?
Yeah, yeah. That's great.
And then the other one that I don't know that we talked about in totality, like we had both finished it, and maybe we did. So maybe we don't take too long, but did we talk about The Agency season 2? We definitely spoke about enjoying it, but I don't know if we were, I don't know if we had finished it. It was, man, it finished real good. It's a great season.
Yeah, I know. I no sophomore slump at all. I really was.
I would say a lot more gas pedal in this season.
Yeah.
They're just,
and that was concerning to me because I thought in some of the promos ahead of time, there was kind of like,
it looked like an action thriller.
Action stuff. You know, there's Fassbender in the desert with a gun. And I thought, oh boy, you know, are we headed in that direction? But boy, nothing wrong with that. I mean, it was spectacular. And I loved the cranked up presence of Richard Gere in this one. Jeffrey Wright was spectacular. Yep. Jeffrey Wright's the highlight.
Wright's the best.
He can do anything. He is so good. So good.
As I said way back in our still exceedingly popular episode about how we would cast a Bond.
Yeah.
They absolutely nailed it by having him as Felix Leiter.
Yeah.
And if there's a multi, you know, multiverse strategy in which I'm out there as a movie director and not a podcaster, I really hope I'm working with Jeffrey Wright.
Yeah.
Because he just, whether it's The Agency, whether it's James Bond or whether it's Westworld, he's so charismatic and you can't look away.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter. He's always, I like an actor that's always kind of playing themselves a little bit. Like I feel like we always get 5% of Jeffrey, kind of like you always get 20% Denzel in any Denzel role.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's one of the great things. And I think Tom Hardy does the same thing. You're never not getting Tom Hardy in the role. He never like fully disassociates. And like, I think Brad Pitt has become that kind of guy. If you watch early stuff, he kind of disappears into some of the roles. And now, you know, you watch Cliff Booth and it's like, is that even 50% Brad Pitt?
I don't know. That's true. Yeah.
I do enjoy that sort of way of being. But yeah, Jeffrey Wright's just, whew.
Yeah.
And this season's great, man. This season, I thought the writing was really sharp. I thought the storyline was like complicated, but not impossible to follow at all.
Yeah.
And I really liked it. And then if what you do want is just action from the fourth minute to the last minute, the first episode of season 3 of Lioness came out on Sunday.
Oh, right. That's right.
It's nuts.
Yeah. Very different kind of show, but
totally different show. Very, very Taylor Sheridan.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, that's I think that kind of like breaks down what I got into. I have it, and I've now made maybe 15 cups of coffee with like a new grinder.
Oh,
and it's completely overpowering my coffee machine. So I might have slipped my way down a rabbit hole that I've avoided for several years. I think that can be, I think I want to make more coffee with it before I kind of give a review on that front.
Sure. Yeah.
But yeah, I'm very caffeinated at the moment. I'm making coffee just to like try new settings and stuff. I probably shouldn't drink all of it. I don't know.
Yeah. Right. Right. That's great.
And then, you know, speaking of stuff in the house, how's the move going? Because you're recording this at the at the new studio, if you
the
will,
new
right?
workstation, the new desk here. I'm just sitting here. I feel like Don Draper. I've got this mid-century.
The desk is
absolutely
gorgeous.
It's I think the term for this desk is a floating desk. So it has this beautiful, huge top panel that is just kind of. It almost gives this optical illusion that it's just literally floating above the drawers, the set of drawers in the front and on the back side, I guess, where I sit. And then on the front side, this was probably an executive desk designed to have someone behind it and then a chair across from it where you're grilling an employee or something, because it has these kind of open shelves in the front where you can put stuff as well. And I've got it set up in such a way that you can see both the front and the back. And I love it. And I've set up this nice office in the basement where it's very quiet and it's cool. It's perfect for recording. I don't know. People probably didn't know this. I didn't say it, or I don't know if you could tell, but for almost the past 6 months, I've been, you know, kind of in transient state recording, like just kind of either hand holding the mic or sitting in a corner at a table. And it's just, it's been fine. It's worked, but it's really nice to just have my stuff organized and all of my ephemera, all of my kind of inspirational stuff around me and hanging on the walls and things. It's just,
absolutely.
It can't be underestimated. So it's great. And I'm still in the middle of moving. I've got a few things left, but, the home stretch is definitely underway. So it feels good.
Fabulous. Well, that's great, man. You sent me a few photos. Looks like Smitty was very much enjoying the desk as well. Which I like. And yeah, the desk is absolutely gorgeous. I'm excited for you to have sort of a locked in spot to do the show and, and you know, who knows, maybe, start working on a new book, that sort of thing. Looked like a really nice spot to crank out a book.
Absolutely.
Over the next little while, I'm not going to step on what you wrote about in a recent Substack, but people should check that out. As that story develops. So really good stuff. But hey, you've got a heart out. I've got to get to cutting grass and prepping for cottage and that kind of thing. You want to jump into some final notes?
Yeah, sure. I've got a quick one, and probably one that almost everyone listening has seen or heard about, if not on Slack or social media, just through our association in the TGN community with our good buddy Tom Place. Great story that popped up in my feed just yesterday, I believe it was, on GQ. GQ does this kind of regular column called Box and Papers, and this was a special edition titled "His Rolex Submariner Fell in a Lake 30 Years Ago. He's Still Diving for It." Stuntman Tom Place bought his dream watch when he was just 18 years old and lost it the same year. Writer Austin Rogers waited out to look for it with him 3 decades later. Just great. I mean, so many of us are familiar with Tom's story about losing his Rolex.
For sure.
And his diving adventures looking for it. But it was cool to see these photos, and especially some of these old photos. There's Tom actually holding his watch as a kid. Some diving photos, some just great shots of Tom, and really a lovely story, and really nice to see Tom getting some more attention. I think he's popped up a lot lately in various places, but this was a particularly personal story. I know it is for him, and it was just kind of fun to kind of read some of the details that I wasn't even familiar with about him and kind of the community where his cabin is and his search for the watch. So
For sure.
Yeah, really a fun story. So we'll throw a link in the show notes. Be sure to check it out on GQ.
Yeah, I don't have a subscription to GQ, so I'll have to fix that to get into this story for sure. And just a big shout out to Austin. He does a great job with his Instagram presence, and we occasionally cross paths in New York when he's at various events. Good dude, and happy to see him cranking out stuff for GQ as well. And look, Tom's one of our absolute favorites. Tom, I know you're listening. Love you lots. Love to see this story get some shine, and it's gonna be quite an event when that watch is pulled out of the mud someday in the future. Oh, I believe.
Can you imagine? Yeah.
It's gonna be great.
That's great.
Then he has to start his own book.
Yeah.
And mine this week is a fun one that came out kind of just as we went on vacation, so it's a couple weeks late. I saw it on the Slack, so I know at least some people saw it. But this is a recent video from Speed that with 3 E's. This is James Pumphrey's channel. I've talked about it a ton on the show. It shouldn't be brand new to any frequent listener. But obviously this is a channel that James and some buddies started post Donut, in which they, they describe it as sort of a men's magazine, but for YouTube, and they do deep dives on various topics. It could be hi-fi, it could be Leica or Levi's or Stussy or you know, Nike SB. Those are all some great examples that they've done in the past that I've talked about. They just did a great video on the right formula for modifying and updating an E30 BMW. So I'm deep in. I really like everything they put out in the world. And a little while ago, they dropped the Rookie's Guide to Watches. It's like Watches 101. Most people listening to this is a watch-themed podcast. This will be too basic of an explainer for a lot of things, but I think you should watch it just to support what they're putting out into the world, and then bookmark it for friends that are getting into watches. This is a very realistic, very low pretense, very fun sort of video that both myself and Cole Pennington make appearances in, helping to explain some of our perspective on watches and the watch world. Cole has gotten to know James over the last little while and you know, had him out to do some tutor stuff and that sort of thing, which began this sort of snowball effect bringing out this video. So, and yeah, just a huge shout out to the team at Speed. Had a nice phone call with them a little while back to weigh in on some questions that they had. And I think they did a really lovely job. I'll do what I can to see if maybe we have James on the show in the future. I think it could be a lot of fun. But he also does a fair number of podcasts. So if you want to hear him talk about Speed or other stuff, Google it. I think you'll find lots. He's out there. And I think they're just doing a lovely job. And it was fun to see them kind of touch in on our world with watches.
That's great. And I haven't watched this yet, but I definitely will. And I'm just amazed that for all these years, how whenever I get cornered, you know, at a party or with somebody I don't know or a family member or something, is, can you explain what it is about watches? And I still struggle. So I'll be curious to watch this. And then it's nice to have this in the pocket to say, don't listen to me, just go watch this. That's great.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Well, fun episode. Good to get caught up. Welcome back from our break. Hope everybody had a nice couple of weeks without us. We do have a Q&A episode that we recorded recently that'll pop up in your feed too. So TGN is back in business. So yeah, welcome back. And as always, thanks so much for listening. If you want to subscribe to the show notes, get into the comments for each episode, or consider supporting the show directly, and maybe even grab a new TGN signed NATO, please visit thegraynato.com. Music throughout is Siesta by Jazzar via the Free Music Archive.
And we leave you with this quote from John Steinbeck, who said, "What good is the warmth of summer without the cold winter to give it sweetness?"